and welcome to the Diz Dads Podcast Midweek Destinations and Diversions Show. It's the Dad Show, your hump day Disney vacation fix for Wednesday, November 12th, 2014. The Dad Show is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is Orlando's premium stroller and crib rental vendor. Why pay more for a less comfortable, less versatile stroller in the theme parks? Make your reservation at KingdomStrollers.com. You'll pay less for the rental, and they'll deliver the stroller of your choice to your resort, and pick it up from the resort at the end of your vacation for free. Kingdom Strollers, your first choice for Orlando stroller rentals, and an authorized Walt Disney World stroller vendor. Show, we'll be talking with Chad King about his family's food and wine festival vacation to Walt Disney World. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, talk to us a little bit about the background here. What, encouraged you to take a food and wine festival trip, and take one at this particular point in October, kind of mid-October?
Well, so if listeners listen to the fall events one you and I did, so this is my favorite time to go. It's the Food and Wine Fest. It's the Halloween shows. We really like that party. We really like the Food and Wine Fest. And just so happened, we had a couple of days off from school, and so it was a good time to go. So we took a couple of days and made a short little trip to Walt Disney World.
Okay. So, short little trip, how many days is a short little trip to you? Because I know that, when you've got the time, we've talked about this in the past, you really enjoy taking kind of a long leisurely trip, but this one was a little shorter than your preference.
Yeah, I mean, we've done 10 and 12 day trips, and this is five. So, long weekend, we left, as you know, there's an early morning Southwest flight that gets right into Orlando. You can get into the park in early afternoon. So we took that on Tuesday. We were in the park around lunchtime and off to the races. And then we came home on a Sunday afternoon. So
okay. Now, before I get too far into the trip report itself, I think that in this case, I do have to note, because I think this is sort of an interesting little sidelight, you had an interesting internal debate as you were about to leave for this trip, because you're also a Kansas City Royals season ticket holder and a longtime fan, and this trip coincided with the beginning of the World Series, right?
Oh, it was so traumatic. I spent a month before, oh, they're never going to the World Series. 2 weeks before, they're not going to make it to the World Series. A week before, they're not going to the World Series. And even 3 days before, they can't win out, right? But no, there they were in the World Series. And I missed game one and game two in Kansas City to go to Disney World. So.
Okay, so I guess I mentioned that because I think you get, in a lot of ways, some real Diz Dad props for, standing up and doing the thing and taking your vacation with your family. You did catch some baseball when you got back, but a difficult decision, I think.
We were home in time to watch game five on television, and I made it to game six and game seven. So we had an unfortunate end to that, but it was fun, so.
All right. So back to Walt Disney World. It sounds like you had this all planned down to a T. What kind of advanced planning went into this vacation? Because you've made this, similar trip, multiple times in the past. Do you have a set routine? Was there anything new that you were doing in terms of planning this time?
I don't know that we do such a super set routine. I mean, with the Food and Wine Fest, what we really do, and I think I've encouraged to you, is, I look at all the menus and say, that's a must hit, that's a must skip, let's check that out and see, and if the line's not too long, maybe we'll try that. And so we kind of approach the Food and Wine Fest that way. There's a couple of booths we just skip entirely, and there's so much food, you don't really feel completely traumatic about skipping something, but it's a lot better than, you know, the people around you that stand and stare at the sign. Well, what's that? What does that mean? Do I want that? It allows you to kind of travel that a little bit better. So,
okay. So to some extent, at least you build your trip around the focal point, which is the Food and Wine Festival for you. What about preparations for the other theme parks? Is this really an Epcot-focused trip, or do you spend time in the other parks as well?
No, I mean, we were there for 5 days. Animal Kingdom is our least favorite. We get the least out of that. We're not, you know, big fans of the zoo. I think it's a great park. If you're into that, that's not our focus. So, you know, on this trip, we didn't even make it over there.
Sure.
But we definitely spent a lot of time at Magic Kingdom. We can talk about the studios now or later. We spent some time there. It's an interesting park right now, and it was actually a weird part of the trip to be at studios. So,
okay. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. I think I want to start first with the resort choice that you made. And maybe talk a little bit about why you choose that resort and, you know, what other things you might have considered.
Yeah, so we really, and, you know, I think it's funny, as you guys did your rank, the other guys did the ranking of the resorts. We're a big fan of the Grand Floridian, and we've stayed there multiple times. We stayed there again this time. We like the travel back and forth to Magic Kingdom. And, you know, on this trip where we want to do the Halloween party, we love getting back and forth to the Magic Kingdom with just the boat that goes to the Floridian and then over to the Polynesian. That's the only way it goes. So you're not dealing with a whole lot of people. We don't use the monorail coming back at night. It allows you to do the Halloween party and still get back without having to wait 45 minutes for the monorail. So we really like that. You know, we did look at the Contemporary this trip because getting back and forth from Magic Kingdom after Halloween party is a little walk. You know, it takes a little while, but you're definitely only dealing with the people walking back.
Sure.
So we couldn't find what we wanted over there this trip, so we ended up back at the Grand Floridian. And, so it's our favorite. We liked it. Hotel-wise, you know, I kind of was thinking one of the things I thought was interesting is this is the first time we've been there since the Vacation Club is fully open over there.
Okay.
And they didn't build them another pool, and that was kind of interesting. I noticed that for October, the pools were really busy at the hotel, now that you've got all those extra Vacation Club
right,
people.
Right, sure. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that many rooms, but I think that one of the things that you get when you have more Vacation Club folks staying there is that those tend to be repeat visitors, and so they also tend to be people who maybe partake more of the resort amenities.
Right, because they're not in the park with every minute, like this is our only trip in our entire lives. It's like, oh, we'll spend half the day at the pool if that's what we're going to do.
So. Exactly. So, yeah, it's an interesting observation because it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, a somewhat similar situation at the Polynesian plays out. I mean, they're getting a major pool refurbishment, and I'm sure the pool's going to be larger, but it doesn't look like they're building, a completely separate, dedicated DVC pool at the Polynesian either. And it's a similar number of rooms that they're adding. I guess it's probably a few less rooms being added just because so many of those are conversion rooms. So
right, I was going to say most of those are conversions, aren't they? I mean, anyway, that was just something I noticed that there's, you know, when they built at Contemporary, they built that building its own pool. So
right. Yeah, and it's a good sized pool that they built at the Contemporary, although they built a lot more rooms at Bay Lake Tower.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, it's interesting. I kind of wish we'd have had you on board when we're doing the resort tournament because I think your perspective on Grand Floridian would have been welcome. All right, so you're doing the Grand Floridian, and I think the primary focus of this trip, you know, we've talked about it already, is Food and Wine Festival, so maybe we should start there and talk a little bit about impressions of Epcot this trip.
That's where we started. We came in Tuesday. We got checked into the resort. Our room wasn't ready, so we said, that's great. We took off on the monorail and headed over to Epcot. Tuesday, we went pretty much right to Food and Wine. there's more selections there than there have been before, so it definitely is not a one-day or a half-day trip if you're there is for that. There's a lot of new food, a lot of new alcohol. You know, we've talked before, and I'll, you know, remind people, my daughter has got celiac disease, so gluten-free options or allergic options are a big deal for us, and Disney's done a really nice job, especially with the food and wine, of adding that and making things naturally gluten-free so you don't have to modify it or be concerned that somebody's going to mess it up. So, you know, one of her favorites, the Mexico Pavilion had a taco that was a ribeye steak on a corn tortilla, and it just, you know, naturally gluten-free, perfect for her, just something really she enjoyed. We actually ended up back there two or three times, so.
All right. See, it's nice to see that those, you know, just, it's not, I'm stumbling over words here, it's not that difficult, really, to do good gluten-free food when you start from the perspective of what, you know, great core ingredient can I use that already doesn't have gluten in it, rather than trying to work backwards and figure out how you can take the gluten out.
Right. And there, you know, there's a lot of, from her, you know, we find a lot of different options where it's just thinking smart about, okay, if I do this with fruit or I do this with corn, then it's naturally gluten-free and you don't have to modify it. So, so we were good for, that was good. You know, Tuesday at Food and Wine in the middle of the day is a good time to do that, because, you know, you don't get the weekend crowds, you don't have the late night crowds, so the lines are pretty manageable going around the park and checking stuff out. You and I talked too. We did purchase the premium package.
Yeah, I was going to ask about how the premium package worked out for you, and the you know, whether you made use of those, the what I guess the package included the separate seating area or you know, table area.
Well, so as you and I talked, it was kind of vague before we went what exactly we were getting.
Right,
and so they need to do a couple of improvements, and we did share that with some cast members, and they said that, you know, they'd had some other feedback, so we'll see what they do next year. But what it was let's talk about the stuff that's not in the park. You got a bottle of wine to your room, some truffles to your room, and a glass to your room that said food and wine. And then the next thing they gave you was there was a party one night a week. Initially, they were talking about Tuesday and Thursday. I think they settled on only doing them Thursday nights, where at 9 o'clock, kind of as the park was closed, there was some desserts and some other foods and watch the fireworks and kind of a space for that. We actually didn't do that because we'd only purchased one package, so only one person could have gone. Thursday wasn't the day we were going to use it, so we skipped that part. But what they need to add, and what I told them, is they need to do kind of a family pass, because I didn't need three bottles of wine. I didn't need three boxes of truffles.
Right.
But I wanted all three of us to be able to get into the not wait in line section of it. And then it was kind of hit or miss. You could only do it Monday through Thursday, so they were avoiding the big crowds anyway.
Right.
But what they did is they had kiosks kind of every so often around the park where they combined three to five of the booths into one space.
Okay.
And you weren't getting anything for free, but you had tables that you could use when tables in, you know, Epcot are a little scarce.
Right.
And then you could order from one person and you'd say, well, I want this from Brazil, I want this from Belgium, I want this from Germany, and then they'd go get it.
Right, and so you basically got yourself a food runner and a place other than a trash can to, you know, place your plate.
Absolutely. So, and again, only having purchased one, we were only allowed one person to go in there. They had kind of set it up where there was a table next to the rope, so my wife could go in and order, and my daughter and I could stand outside the rope, and we could talk to each other and make it work. But, I told them they definitely need to do like a family thing where maybe it's, you know, one base price, but then another $50 per person or whatever to get access to that and get maybe the party. We didn't know exactly what we were getting, so we didn't want to buy three.
Sure.
And the other part of it was, the other made it affordable, was there was a $50 gift card to use at the Food and Wine Fest. So.
Right. All right. And so you did find some usefulness out of it, but it had its limitations. It's good that they were collecting feedback because it did sound like an interesting offering, but I think you've pointed out a couple of the kind of big holes in the plan, which is that, you know, when a good chunk of the value of this package that they're selling is this, you know, in-room gift, and it's not appropriate for a kid anyway, right? You can't get your daughter a bottle of wine.
Right.
And you're not, you know, it's not easy to bring bottles of wine back with you. So after spending however much time at Food and Wine Festival, you're really going to go back to your room and drink 3 bottles of wine in a 5-day period.
Right. That was just never going to happen. So the one bottle was fine, and that was, you know, that was good. But, you know, we could have used 3 people going into the room. Yeah, so.
Right. All right. So what were some of the highlights of the festival? You talked a little bit about it in terms of the finding good gluten-free options and you know, that kind of thing. But what were some of the standouts for you? You know, after the fact, looking back, what did you really enjoy?
Oh, you know, I think I'm always amazed that, you know, they always find something new. They do find some things that they bring back. Like I said, that we really enjoyed. The Mexico Pavilion had some new tacos that I didn't remember the way they'd put it together last year. You know, it was, like I said, my daughter got the ribeye taco as opposed to like a ground beef or, you know, something, you know, chicken. That was really good. The sausage pretzel at Germany is always good. They'd also done some redesign in how they did the food. They had more people working and more people in the booths. That made it really smooth. We didn't see really bad lines until the one time we tried to go on the weekend. So that made it more enjoyable. I think, you know, for us, it's just, you know, plan and say, hey, let's sample something new and try some different foods. I don't remember, like, anything that, you know, we had to get 3 or 4 times or that was just blew us away. So,
okay, so one other question about Food and Wine offerings before we move on from it. One of the things that, you know, we hear complaints about on one hand, and then there was some criticism after the fact, too. You know, there were concerns over the last year or 2 years, really, especially that the level of, let's say, overconsumption of alcohol during Food and Wine Festival was getting to be a detriment, that people were noticing, particularly at night, that, you know, there was an excess of excess, shall we say. And it sounds like Disney heard the complaints because this year, rather than offering, you know, 6-ounce, 12-ounce, and 22-ounce beers, all of the beer sampling was limited to 6-ounce cups. What was your reaction? Was that, you know, reasonable to you? Is it adequate? How did that feel?
You know, I didn't put that together, but you're right. I did notice everybody was drinking either the 4-ounce samplers where you get, you know, you try 4 at once, right. You'd get a 6-ounce beer. So I did notice it now, but I hadn't put that together until you mentioned it in that way. You know, we've done this a few years, so we've smartly avoided Friday or Saturday night, tried to go do something else.
Sure.
But, you know, some of the excess being that issue, but also kind of being, you know, we don't – it doesn't do me any good to wait in a 20 or 30-minute line to get, you know, a beer and a pretzel. That's – I, you know, I can do that other places. So we try and do Food and Wine on, you know, Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday evening kind of thing, and then we're not dealing with a huge crowd. So.
Sure.
We have seen that in the past. I didn't see it this year. We were there on the weekend with a little different focus. We had dinner over there, you know, I think, a Saturday night. So it wasn't so bad.
Okay. Well, good.
I think they've done a good job of dealing with that. So,
and obviously you didn't notice any detriment to the, you know, the smaller beers because that's kind of what they were using in the samplers anyway. So
right, okay. And I try and do, you know, I'm not the biggest beer drinker. You know, I like other things, and so for me it's always, oh well, let me try these 4 beers, and oh well, that one's not going to be my favorite. Let's try these other 3.
Sure.
So I tend to go towards the samplers to kind of try and sample beer. So
makes sense. Okay, so that is, you know, the food and wine part of Epcot. Anything else about Epcot that, you know, stood out to you either, you know, positively or negatively? You know, obviously you were there after closing of Maelstrom. Did you notice any changes in attraction riding patterns or fast pass availability or any of that kind of thing?
You know, it's interesting. It took Norway and made it, you know, the other thing they have moved, and I don't know, I think the last time we were there, Anna and Elsa was still in Norway, so it took Norway from really crazy to really kind of calm, and it was kind of a different section over there.
Yeah.
You know, so that made a big difference. I will tell you, and you know, we can talk maybe about Fastpass Plus kind of too. The one thing we noticed is, and I don't know that it's directly attributable to Maelstrom, but the wait for Journey into Imagination has just gotten ridiculous. So we waited 30 minutes for that ride.
Wow.
And, you know, that used to be a walk-on 90% of the time. So that would be the one wait time where it was bad. Conversely, we had a fast pass for Soarin', and that's the fastest I've ever gotten on that ride. So they were moving people through, and it seemed to move really quickly once you got past the merge of fast pass and standby. You know, it always seemed like, oh, we got to that point, and then it seemed to take forever. That section seemed to move quicker this trip. So,
okay. Yeah, you know, I kind of struggle with the Journey into Imagination thing because on the one hand, you know, I think a piece of it is that putting a FastPass Plus attraction there and then requiring people to choose three FastPasses is actually driving people to the attraction who were just bypassing it before.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw that a lot. Those people were a lot of people were using FastPasses for that ride.
Yeah, and it, you know, partially because there just aren't a lot of other good choices for fast passes at Epcot. And so part of me says, you know, that's kind of a good thing because it means more people are enjoying the attraction. And I think it was an underappreciated attraction for a while there. The flip side, of course, is that those of us who did enjoy it now actually have to wait in a line.
Right. And instead of riding it three or four times, we're like, okay, well, that's our once, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like the FastPass Plus is at least distributing people to different attractions in Epcot, which is theoretically what it's supposed to do. Okay, so let's talk then about the next park on the agenda, and that's Magic Kingdom, because I know that you had some, you know, major plans for Magic Kingdom. About how much time did you spend there, and did you do a Halloween party this year?
Yeah, I think we probably, you know, it's funny, we're talking about how the food and wine was our focus, but we probably spent more time in Magic Kingdom than anything this trip. You know, it was more on a kind of a focus thing. So we did do a Halloween party. We also did a rope drop entry to the park. So we kind of had, you know, both ends of the spectrum on this short trip there. So this was our first trip with the mine ride. So we did that. You want to talk about that first?
Sure.
Okay.
Hey, if it stood out, that's what we want to talk about.
So we used FastPass the two times we got to ride it, so I never saw the queue. We tried to get there a couple of different times. We even looked at during the Halloween party because I did want to see the queue, but it was never below a 90-minute wait the entire time we were in the kingdom.
Wow.
So I just – it was not – it was not worth it to me to wait 90 minutes when we had a couple of fast passes.
Yeah, just
for
to see
it.
The queue.
Right. So that being, I know you haven't done it yet. I would say it's a good ride. I'd say it's unremarkable. But the animatronics are amazing. They're really, really good. But, you know, it's just a solid coaster. I think what's interesting is, and we actually ran into a research person as we got off, so we talked to them a little bit. It seems to be that Disney is marketing it as a thrill ride. And she said to us that they really intended for it to blend into Fantasyland. So it's supposed to be, you know, Barnstormer Plus.
Yeah.
Which, if you go into it thinking that's what it is, great ride. Really fun, really solid. But you know, you look at the marketing pieces and it's like, no, this is another Big Thunder. They've added really a thrill ride to this section of the park. And they, that wasn't their intention and that wasn't what they built. So,
yeah. And I think it's interesting because, you know, I've been saying this since it was still under construction, that it sounded to me as things were rolling out with this, that this is one of those times when, you know, park operations and Imagineering are on one page and marketing is on a different page.
Right. And, you know, and that was definitely our feel.
Because Park Ops and Imagineering said from the beginning that this was the transition coaster. You know, this is one more lift hills and drops than Barnstormer, and one fewer lift hills and drops than Big Thunder Mountain.
Right.
It was the perfect fit right in between, and it also gave the Imagineers a chance to really show off these sort of next generation animatronics within the attraction in the dark ride portion. And somehow marketing got a hold of this, and the only way it seems that they understand how to sell a ride now is to talk about how thrilling and exciting it is. And it's really frustrating as a fan of great theme park attractions to see that of all people, Disney marketing doesn't get that.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, it was a good solid ride, but it's not as thrilling as like the commercials and stuff make it out to be. So,
right.
I want to point out a point of caution too. So, you know,
Yeah. We talked about this, and I'm glad you remembered to mention it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you know, right as you get to the bottom of the hill, right before the ride lifts you up to the hill, there's a real big jerk as you engage with the lift mechanism, and my daughter hit her head on the back of the seat. So, you know, as an adult, I was taller than that seat, so your head just kind of jerks, and you're like, oh, okay, we're ready to go. But she smacked her head pretty good on the ride. So I'd caution anybody, you know, maybe under 5 foot to, you know, watch their kid's head. So we did talk to a guy there, and he said, yeah, it's happened quite a bit, and they've been asking for some cushions. So maybe Disney will finally get that fixed. But, you know, just share that with people to be careful. So,
yeah, and you said you kind of found a bit of a workaround on future rides, basically telling your daughter to, you know, hang on to the lap bar there, you know, right at when you reach that point, because that way you can keep your head from slipping back.
Right. She kind of held her body a little forward so she didn't jerk all the way back. So yeah. that was the next time she rode it. That tended to be okay. So,
yeah, that's a good tip, and I'm glad you mentioned that. So that was the first time you'd experienced Mine Train. Were there other parts of New Fantasyland that you were experiencing for the first time, or that maybe you noticed something different about, you know, now that Mine Train is opened?
You know, so now that Mine Train is open, the traversing around New Fantasyland is a lot smoother. I think it's really where they wanted it to be, with all the walls up. You know, there was always kind of a mess getting around the Little Mermaid ride and getting over to, you know, the redesign of the Big Top Circus area. The crowd seemed to have figured out how to move a lot better, so that seemed to be real smooth. I still haven't figured out, you know, we did it both ways, and I'm not sure which is faster. If you're going from, say, Peter Pan to Dumbo, which is faster? So you'll have to do that and let me know what you think, too.
Okay.
So. Because Mine Ride is really long, but it's just right in the walkway. So,
yeah, interesting thought.
But they have made wide walkways on both sides, so you can kind of go either way. So,
sure.
You know, everything else we had done, we had been there in the last year, so it was really just we were there. I think less than 30 days before Mine Ride opened on our last trip. So
you just missed it.
We just missed it. We were really hoping that we'd get a soft opening the last time, and we didn't. And it didn't make it. So, you know, I guess Anna and Elsa moving over was new since we've been back. And that was kind of an interesting thing. We could not get a fast pass for Anna and Elsa for the 5 days. It just didn't seem to be long enough. So we kind of were resigned. We weren't going to meet them. We did end up there at Rope Drop. And said, okay, let's just go for it. And we went over there and did Anna and Elsa at a rope drop and waited about 30 minutes. So
that's reasonable. I mean, it's not great, but it's not that bad given the popularity of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, and they're getting people through there as fast as they can. But they have done a really nice job there. And, you know, we also did the Talking Mickey up front. And in both of those cases, the characters really do spend a nice time with you. So even though those are long waits, they've made it worth the wait. So maybe they're made it a little longer, but giving a little bit more value to both of those meet and greets.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's, I guess, one of the reasons that the wait is a little longer, but, you know, it balances out. Okay, so before I get to the dark side here for in a minute, anything else that stood out about Magic Kingdom in a positive way? And let's leave the party for a minute, but, you know, just about spending the time that you spent in Magic Kingdom?
No, I mean, you know, in general, we had a good time and we had a good trip to Disney. So I wouldn't say anything remarkable stood out. Okay. In positive, so.
All right, so now we have to talk about it because I have to share, I got this text from you. You had your cursed day at Magic Kingdom.
We did. We had one particular day where it seems like the rides were down more often than normal, and it seemed to be like right before we were walking there or as we were getting somewhere, the ride would shut down or we'd make plans to walk over there and we'd like look at the My Magical Experience and the ride had be closed. And so the mine ride actually was down, if I remember right, like we had lunch and we had like a 1:30 time and I kept looking at it and it was down from like 11:30 to 12:45. And I'm like, okay, I'm getting ready for that text message from Disney telling me that I'm going to have to replace my fast pass window. But we actually ended up okay. They got it right back up right before our time. But man, we just had one day where Pirates was down and then the mansion was down. And I know you talked to some other people. Belle had some massive issues with the mirror that day and we were in the park that day. And so
right,
it was just like, what is going on at Magic Kingdom today? So,
yeah. Now, the nice thing is it does sound like you were able to kind of maneuver around it. But I just have to laugh because, you know, this was essentially, you know, you sent me that text. And then the next day at Disneyland, you know, because you were at Disney World while we were at Disneyland. And the next day, it was like you passed the virus to us.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, because so. Michaela and I went from attraction to attraction and had like four in a row.
Oh, that's crazy. So,
yeah.
Anyway. Well, and I would say you're not so lucky at Disneyland. The My Disney Experience app has its good and bad, but it is pretty good about keeping up on what rides are down. Maybe the wait times can be off or not, but I have found pretty good that, you know, if I'm near an attraction and it's down, the app says it's down, so.
Yeah, that's true. And that was something that I missed at Disneyland. I made a lot of use of the Disneyland version of the Touring Plans app, but it had a bit of a lag to report ride closures. It was good on times, but closures, it took a while to catch up on.
Well, and the closures are user reported, so you had to have somebody else there to tell you.
Exactly.
It was problematic, exactly. So.
Okay, so that was, you know, the regular during the day stuff at Magic Kingdom. Let's talk about the party a little bit. What were some highlights of the party, things that stood out to you?
Well, I want to tell you something else that I think will make you happy that I haven't told you yet. The Peter Pan queue looks like it's going under a remodel. Where the bathrooms used to be was all roped off, and, you know, we're improving this space. So maybe you're going to get something the next time you get to Peter Pan.
Okay. Well,
I know that. I know that queue is your least favorite thing in the park. So. Oh,
that queue is my kryptonite. I can't stand that queue. It drives me crazy.
So, I don't know what they were doing. Of course, they never tell you anything, but it looked like they were doing something there. So,
it's interesting because there's no downtime scheduled for Peter Pan because we just did the show on Refurbs, and there's nothing on the schedule for it. So, it'll be interesting to see.
Well, you know, they took those bathrooms out, so they have that whole wall there that they can do something with without having to really shut down the queue. So
that's true. That's true.
Okay, so Halloween party. You know, you and I talked about this in advance. We talked about it in the fall event. You know, we always recommend sleeping in or using the resort the day before you do it. Because you're just way too tired if you do anything else. And, of course, you know, I didn't listen to my own advice. And so the one night we were there, we ended up leaving after the fireworks. So we didn't make full use of staying till midnight. And you know, maybe if I'd made it till midnight or 1 a.m., we might have been able to do the mine ride in the dark. And,
oh, yeah.
Without much crowd. But, you know, we were there till, I think, 10:30. So we got a good part of it. So... the parade was really, really good. They added some new characters and some new floats. I mean, we know we talked about they've added Wreck-It Ralph, and they've. But it seemed like they've really upgraded what they've done with the Haunted Mansion. Haunted Mansion's added some, you know, it's some new things, and that was really good. If you have to make a choice, the villain show on stage is really good and fun, but I would tell you the parade is better. So. We did check out the dance party inside the Diamond Horseshoe, and as you and I talked about, you know, they took Maleficent and the Evil Queen out of that party for the special event.
Right, right.
We didn't miss them, so we were okay in there. Had fun dancing with the villains that were in there. They did have the stepmother from... Cinderella.
Tremaine.
Yeah, Lady Tremaine and her daughters were there, and one of the cast members told us that they change out the villains, but they never know who's going to come and who's when they're going to come, so there's no kind of schedule to that. So, and then they, you know, they always have a dance party in Tomorrowland, and they had Monsters U characters out this year, so that was nice. There were quite a few characters doing autographs and signatures. We kind of looked at those people but didn't really want to wait in any long lines for that. So sometimes yeah. Those lines are short, sometimes they're long. We hit it kind of on a long night. So I know we were there on a sold-out night, which makes it a little worse. And, you know, we were close to Halloween, so there were a lot of people there. So
yeah.
What else did I want to say? Oh, I would tell people if you do it next year, really use the map for trick-or-treating. They do have clearly marked where the trick-or-treat stations are, but the ones that are close to huge access points had long lines, and the ones that weren't were almost empty. So it was just really interesting. We saw some lines that looked like a 30-minute wait, and then we got some trick-or-treating places where we were, you know, 1 of 10 people getting candy at the time we were there. So yeah.
It's interesting because I think that the candy trails in Magic Kingdom have been sort of in flux for the last few years, because for the last 2 years, the candy trails have been kind of a mess because of all the construction. And I remember at one point having a really difficult time even finding the candy trails during the height of the Fantasyland construction. And so now that construction is all done, I wonder if they've kind of found the homes for these yet, or whether they're still experimenting.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, and it's hard to tell in some places. Some of them are trails where... And maybe it's because of Fantasyland. They moved them around the last couple of years. So I don't want to say hard and fast, this is a trail. But there are a couple of places where there's a trail where there's 4 or 5 people handing out candy. When you get in one line and get 4 or 5 people. And there's other places where it's just one. So, you know, there was one place back by Stitch where I thought for sure they'd have 3 or 4 buckets of candy, and they only had one, and it was a line. So, I don't know. They move them around, but they do, you know, the walkway from the circus area to Tomorrowland that kind of walks along the railroad track. That's a trail,
right.
And there are 4 or 5 people giving out candy there. So,
okay.
So maybe they've moved those around in the past. That one seems to be pretty consistent because it's a nice little trail. It's not usually very busy, so they can just say, hey, this is candy. So,
yeah, that does make sense.
The fireworks for the Halloween party were really, really good. You know, they call it Hallow Wishes, so it's kind of a play off the wishes they normally do.
Right.
But, you know, they do fireworks above the castle, and then they do some kind of around the hub. So if you're standing on Main Street or you're standing, we actually yeah, we were actually kind of near Main Street, but it kind of goes all around in a circle around you. So there's some, you know, most of it above the castle, but some kind of around in a circle. That's a really neat addition that they did for the fireworks show. So,
yeah, yeah. I love those perimeter fireworks. They really do kind of make the show.
You know, and then other than that, it really is just, you know, trick-or-treating and, you know, being at the park late and people in costumes all around you and having a good time. So.
All right. Well, sounds good. So you mentioned as we were starting that you had sort of an interesting perspective or take on Hollywood Studios from this trip. It is really definitely a park in transition. What was your experience at Hollywood Studios?
Well, so while we were on the trip, Disney announced that they're removing the Sorcerer's Hat and they announced the closing of Jack Sparrow. So.
Right.
You know, Great Movie Ride has been announced to be closing. The Backlot Tour closed.
Oh, wait, no, back up. There are rumors about Great Movie Ride.
Okay, well.
There's nothing that's beneficial about Great Movie Ride at all.
What I have been told about Great Movie Ride is that they schedule weddings and special events, and they have that stuff booked 9 months out. And they are not taking any new reservations, so...
Right. And that can mean a lot of things, including refurbishment of the attraction.
Sure.
So we don't really know what's happening there. It's a somewhat similar situation with the stunt show, the Indiana Jones stunt show.
Okay.
Because, you know, there have been heavy rumors about it closing, but that's another one that has a space that is used very frequently for various corporate events.
Okay.
Because they actually use... You know, some of that stage area, they can set up a whole big, huge banquet and have it be totally out of the way.
Right. Well, so we'll take Great Movie Ride out, but they've closed Backlot Tour, they've closed Sounds Dangerous, they've closed American Idol, and they closed the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids playground. So that park is gone from...
Yeah, no, actually, the playground should be reopening.
Is it back open?
It's supposed to.
Okay. It was. I don't think it was open when we were there.
Okay.
We didn't kind of go past it, but I know I had read it had been closed.
Yeah.
So that park has gone to, you know, some people had made it a half-day park already to, like, wow, I mean, it's a third of a day park. And, you know, we made it to lunch. We actually like the Play and Dine for breakfast. You know, the characters are good and it's fun, but it's a good buffet there. But we're real big fans of 50s Primetime Cafe, so we almost always do lunch there. But we did that, had a fast pass at Star Wars, and we were out of there. There wasn't anything else to do. So,
yeah.
And so I know that. You know, we've talked about rumors, and you've talked about various rumors, and there's all sorts of message boards, ideas of what's going to happen. But they need to have something open fast, because that park is seriously has some serious space issues right now. So,
yeah, I mean, they keep saying it. I keep waiting for the official announcements to come, right? Because at this point. All they've announced are closures, and you know that there are plans in the works because, as you were just saying, you know, this park can't continue with basically, you know, FastPass Plus for every attraction because that's all the attractions that exist in the park at the moment. I mean, you know, there are a few shows here that we haven't really mentioned much, but even those shows are long-in-the-tooth shows that have been around for, you know, 15 years now.
Well, and what's interesting, you know, I mean, Sounds Dangerous closed, what, 8 years ago and never reopened, but that space is empty.
Well,
but,
except that they've been using that space for Jedi Training Academy registration.
Okay. But, you know, American Idol was hundreds, if not thousands of people a day, you know, sitting through that show, which, you're right, it was a little long in the tooth, and I'm not sorry they closed it. But, you know, that took people out of line for Star Wars. It took people out of line for Tower of Terror. It took people out of line for other stuff. And so, and, you know, I don't know that the Jack Sparrow thing ever really caught on. I don't know how good the crowds were, but still there were hundreds of people a day using that. So it was interesting. We didn't really notice that Toy Story was any worse. I don't know that ride could have been worse. But
right.
Star Wars definitely had much longer lines, bigger crowds, more consistent wait. Just because you've taken there wasn't other stuff to do. So
yeah, No, it's an interesting situation, and I guess I'm just, you know, waiting to see.
Well, and it's, you know, funny because, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, the rides that are there, I mean, we love Toy Story. We love Tower of Terror. We love the Star Wars rides. I like the Aerosmith ride. I can't get my daughter to do it with me. So it's a once in a while thing. But, you know, I love the rides that are there, but it's like, you know, it's hard to say, you know, on a, if you're only going for 2 or 3 days, you know, you might even skip that park now because sure. there's a lot of dead space right now. So,
yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay. So let's, you know, we've talked about the parks. Quick question about dining, because I know that you really enjoy the table service dining at Disney World, and you know, maybe a little different this trip because you know you had a focus on food and wine. But any particular restaurant experiences that stood out, either on the plus or the minus side?
You know, you would think it would be different because we had food and wine, but no, we still made our reservations and checked out the food. You know, eat a pretzel bun with a sausage on my way to eat at Le Cellier. So,
man after my own heart.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's the comedian Jim Gaffigan said, "There's it's the only place on earth that you can walk 100 miles and still gain 5 pounds." So,
right.
No, I mean, we had, you know, we made our typical reservations. I think I told you when we talked about the how to eat special, we love the Plaza, and our favorite chef was there the day we were there. So he took good care of us and really, you know, gave us something good to do. You know, we tend to do more table services than probably the average person just because we know we can schedule and make sure that we're okay for food for my daughter.
Right.
So, you know, we didn't do anything really remarkable. We kind of avoided, on a shorter trip, we kind of avoided some of the big ticket places. We didn't do California Grill that we've done in the past. We did do Le Cellier since we were in Epcot. You know, we're big fans of Garden Grill. I think it's a really underappreciated restaurant. It's usually pretty busy, so I think people go there, but I don't know that everybody makes it a trek to get there. So,
sure.
So you know, food was solid. We had a good trip. So
excellent. Well, you know, I think we've covered sort of the details, so I guess I end like I always do and say, you know, if you had a couple of pieces of advice to pass on to somebody who was, you know, putting together maybe a similar trip, you know, looking at this time of year and considering, you know, the particular kinds of things that you did, what are a couple of pieces of advice you might offer?
You know, the only thing, so you and I have had this conversation. You and I tend to be on the opposite ends of love-hate relationship with FastPass Plus. But, you know, the one thing that we were able to do with FastPass Plus this trip that is just, you know, it is the benefit of this trip versus this system versus anything else is, you know, we did get to Epcot Tuesday after lunch time and got to ride Soarin' that day. Which is something you just didn't get to used to do unless you were there at Rope Drop. So I think, you know, if you're looking at something like that, that's the thing I will tell you, you know, you can use the Epcot FastPass for Soarin' or Test Track to get there in the afternoon and maybe book your FastPasses there in the afternoon and go someplace else in the morning.
Sure.
You know, this was our first trip where we could do the 4th and 5th FastPass. The only way it really worked for us was at Magic Kingdom. It seems to be the only park where there's enough to do to get it.
Right.
But by the time we were done with our 3rd Fast Pass, all the mountains were gone. Anna and Elsa was gone. Not even Peter Pan was available. Okay. It makes it interesting that, you know, you had Winnie the Pooh and you had Barnstormer and you had Dumbo and maybe Pirates of the Caribbean here or there. So it's a little interesting to what you've got available for 4th or 5th Fast Pass. So, but, you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about that just drives me crazy is I think that what used to be no wait rides have gotten to become moderate rates, rides, moderate waits. So we saw Pirates as bad as 60 minutes Right. We saw Haunted Mansion as bad as 60 Minutes. You know, for late October, that was really jarring to see those two rides at an hour-long wait. So, and the Tomorrowland Transit Authority hit 20 minutes at one point. So,
okay.
That was a eye-opener when there's a person standing out in the middle of Tomorrowland with a sign saying, line starts here. So,
yeah, I guess that's true.
So I would say the advice there is, you know, use your fast passes for the stuff you definitely want. Make sure you get what you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, be prepared that your big ticket rides are going to be one or two time things as opposed to, you know, if you were that person that was like, I'm going to use a fast pass for Space Mountain and only Space Mountain, and I'm going to ride it, you know, nine times in a day. That's just not available anymore, so.
That's true. That's a good point. And that's probably the biggest thing to me that's changed with FastPass Plus is, you know, that ability to just re-ride a headliner attraction over and over again as many times as you could, you know, get back to the FastPass machine and pull another ticket.
Right.
Has pretty much gone away.
But, you know, at the same time, it has the run to Space Mountain in the morning is almost gone. I didn't see that at all.
Right.
Now it's the run to Anna and Elsa, and it's the run to Mine Ride. But it seemed to be, you know, at Rope Drop, that was it. It was those two, and that was it.
Okay.
Well, so if you wanted to ride Space Mountain nine times, you can walk over there at Rope Drop and probably get, you know, two or three in before you're like, oh, okay, I don't want to wait in line.
That's a good point, too. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your trip experience with us.
Yeah, we had a good time. I'm happy to share, so.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you again next time. Next one up is Disneyland, right?
We are going to California for the first time, so I've been listening to your notes and figure out what we're going to do. So,
all right. Well, we'll talk again in the spring.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
One little spark of inspiration is at the heart of all creation, right at the start of everything that's new. One little spark lights up for you. You could come along. I am the Dreamfinder. Musical notes, what delightful melodies those will make. I love these flights of fancy, searching the countryside for sounds, colors, ideas, anything that sparks the imagination. A sunbeam, that's a good one. Everything that I can collect can inspire amazing and marvelous new ideas. Never know what kind of figment you may come up with. Here's my favorite. Two tiny wings, eyes big and yellow, horns of a steer,